Hi, and welcome to part two of the special broadcast recording of the Mythgard Institute announcement show. If you haven't heard part one yet, go back and check the podcast feed and listen to that one first. In this episode, I take some more questions from listeners and discuss some of the ideas behind the Institute with the Middle-earth Network guys.
Welcome back to the second part of our discussion on the brand new Mythgard Institute here on Middle Earth Network Radio. I'm Michael Kaiser, station director at Middle Earth Network Radio, and with me is Mark Ossley, director of operations at Middle Earth Network. We have John DiBartolo, director of marketing and special projects at Middle Earth Network, Dave Kale, programming director of Middle Earth Network Radio, and the esteemed Dr. Corey Olson, president of Mythgard Institute. Corey, how did we... Give us the history on the name Mythgard Institute.
Well, the name is I think it's really fun, and it's one of those, you know, as soon as we thought of it, and if I remember correctly, Mark, you were the one who actually came up with the name. So I got to give a shout out
in the shower. Yep, in the shower.
Right.
Actually,
so. It's the muses. The muses he takes showers with.
Yep. Exactly. And basically I love the name because it's sort of a what Tolkien and Lewis would have called a portmanteau word, referring back to Lewis Carroll's Through the Looking Glass and Humpty Dumpty talking about portmanteau words, which are words that are made up of two different words folded together. And the two words folded together that make up the name Mythgard is first mythopoeia, which is the word that Tolkien invented to describe the process of writing and making myth, which is what he and C.S. Lewis both were very excited about as writers of fantasy. So you've got mythopoeia and Midgard, which is the Old Norse and early word for Middle Earth, which just means the world that we live in. And this is, you know, those two things are things that you can see Tolkien being really committed to in his life and in his work, to take the mythic, the world of the mythic imagination, and to combine it with and to bring it into the real world, and to sort of make it a part of our own imaginative experience, and to transform Midgard, Middle Earth, the Middenjärd in Anglo-Saxon, which, again, he always said, Middle Earth, Midgard, is the world around us. And so we sort of take both of those things together in one place. And as Mark said that, you know, Mythgard, I was like, yeah, that's it. That's like both of the elements that I wanted. And so I thought this really does help you to kind of catch that vision and share that vision. I think about, some of the ways that Tolkien talked about this in his works, especially in some of his later short stories, when he was writing The Lord of the Rings, or after he had written The Lord of the Rings and was thinking about how this worked and what it could do, like his story Leaf by Niggle, about the painter who's painting this tree and the effect that he shows of that painting having on people, that these people get this glimpse of a single leaf, maybe, or maybe they see the painting and they get a glimpse of the mountains behind the tree, and that, you know, the artist's vision, you know, the artist's mythopoeic vision, helps them to perceive something, some kind of, you know, not just an imaginative world, but something of actual reality that lies behind the world. And, and we see a similar kind of vision in, Tolkien's short story, Smith of Wootton Major, when you have the sort of the land of fairy opened to Smith and kind of the glimpses that he was given of it, even in sort of smaller and trivial stories within his regular world. So yeah, I think it's an exciting thing. And, you know, like we said back at the beginning of our previous session, this is something that I think, you know, it is so natural and just so wonderful. And I am so grateful for the opportunity to be working together with the Middle Earth Network, because I think, you know, this is something, you know, as soon as I was, have been in touch with you guys, it is clear that your vision for the Middle Earth Network and what I was, you know, wanting to do in my podcast and what we're working together to do through the Institute, are really very close together. And I find those very exciting.
Yeah, we do too. I can't tell you how many times I've probably mentioned this to everyone that we're working together, but I could not have asked for better people to take this journey with. And just a shout out too to our affiliates out there that have, you know, kind of joined with us independent, but have joined with us. But SQPN, Father Roderick out there, Casual Stroll to Mortar, and just so many. I mean, I think there's 56 sites collectively that have kind of come together here to work together on all these projects.
Yeah. No, it's exciting times, and I think certainly I'm very excited about the starting up of the Institute. But it's just kind of amazing to think. It's amazing to think that the Institute, as big as this is, as big as this initiative is, and the kind of impact that it could have, not only for individual people but for Tolkien studies as a whole. And yet it's only one of the things that the Middle-earth Network is doing. I mean, you guys also have a whole bunch of other projects too. It's just amazing.
Yeah. We'll have to have another night on those, but tonight's about Mythgard. So. Yeah.
Dr. Olson, I think we should also give a shout out to, and this goes along right with what Mark was saying about the vision of bringing artists together, in the Middle-earth Network.
Yeah.
Wenjin Lu from China is a wonderful artist that contacted us through the Middle Earth Network, and she's the one who actually created the logo for the Mythgard Institute.
That's right.
And My Middle Earth too, as well.
My Middle Earth as well. So we're really grateful to her, and she's all the way over there in China. And so maybe you could talk a little bit about the logo for Mythgard Institute, because I think that speaks to the vision that you were just talking about.
Yeah, very much. No, this logo I had in mind for sort of as soon as I asked myself, what graphic I would like to see. The image that we have there is just came into my mind right away. The centerpiece is the tree, and the two kind of references that is to is one is to what I just mentioned, the story Leif by Niggal and his great painting of the tree. And in that story of Leif by Niggal, the tree sort of represents, is an illustration of the work of the mythopoeic artists and the stories and works that artists in different genres are able to kind of the vision that they're able to share with people, but also the metaphor that Tolkien uses in On Fairy Stories when he's talking about storytelling and story reading in general, and he talks about every story being a leaf on the tree of tales. The idea of having this large spreading tree of tales, be sort of the symbol of the Institute, because that's what we're doing. When you're studying works, to be thinking in these terms, we are unfolding leaves. We are giving the sort of loving care to these individual stories that Niggle gave to the individual leaves on the tree in his painting, which he himself comes confronted with later on in the story. So that's what the tree in the front signifies. You'll see in the back right behind the tree, in the distance, you can see mountains rising into the distance. That, again, is a reference to Leif by Niggal, sort of that greater world, which the artistic world represented by the tree opens up to people, sort of these wider vistas that are revealed through that. And then at the top, you will see the star in the sky above it, which not only might remind one of the star of Eärendil, but of course the particular passage that I had in mind when I thought of it was that one of my favorite passages in all of The Lord of the Rings, when in the beginning of book six of The Return of the King, when Sam is with Frodo in Mordor and he's just set him free from the Tower of Cirith Ungol, and they are lying and he's keeping watch and Frodo is asleep and he looks up in the sky and the clouds tear apart and he sees this one star shining up in the dark sky above him, and he is reminded, he is struck by the reminder that there is high beauty that is beyond the touch of the shadow, and that the shadow is only a small and passing thing. So the sort of that one little glimpse of high beauty that sort of presides over the whole is what that star points to. So anyway, those are the images in my mind. So
I was just going to say another shout out too. Speaking of art, John, do you want to talk to who has one of our good friends and one of the people I respect most? I think one of the most respected artists in Tolkien art out there. has provided a lot of the artwork for the Mythgard and My Middle Earth site as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Ted Naismith has graciously provided us with all of his visionary Tolkien art, which is just absolutely, for me, and I've probably said this on previous shows, really captures the spirit of Tolkien's works in painted art. And it's just wonderful that we've been able to grace the Mythgard Institute website with all of this wonderful art. And I would, you know, highly recommend people check out, read through the whole site, but just take a look at the art and then follow back to Ted's site. And you could scan through all of his Silmarillion works and Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And he's just got volumes of art, various scenes from Tolkien's works. So we have to really give a great thanks to Ted for allowing us to use the art for the entire project of the Mythgard Institute and the Middle Earth Network.
I've been so excited about that.
I think that's what amazes me about this whole project with what we're talking about with Mythgard and the university and what we're talking about even with Middle Earth Network and My Middle Earth is just the caliber of people that have become involved in this. Everyone from on the scholarly side to the artistic side to the, you know, to the music side to I have to sit and pinch myself every day. This is truly a coming together of kind of the best of the best out there. So,
and let's remind the listeners out there how they can get to the Mythgard Institute website in order to enjoy, because it's just an absolutely gorgeous site. And if you point your browser to Mythgard, MYTHGARD.org. And you can see that logo that Corey was talking about that he's so proud of, and the beautiful artwork on here and the information. My wife sat down and read through the website the other night, every single word, and she says, "You know, I qualify. I could go through this if I had the time to write, you know, 30."
John did a tremendous job on that in a weekend powered with coffee and I think lots and lots of coffee.
Yes, the rocket fuel of website building. And I do believe that Dave is gathering up or trying to make compile a cohesive list of all the questions that he's receiving. That's why he hasn't typed in here.
While he's doing that, I'm gonna just thank everybody for joining in the chat room there. Fang, Laura, Arwen, let's see who else we have, Miranda, others coming in and out there, but just all of your questions, Laura, yep, all of your questions, everything like that, just keep them coming.
Yeah, so I'm going to start off with a softball for you, Corey, for the second part. This is I imagine this is probably the most frequently asked question that you get, and it's certainly the one I've seen the most, which is, will you offer a course on X, where X is some topic, be it Old English or Quenya or C.S. Lewis or, dare I say it, Harry Potter? Or no one has actually asked about Twilight yet, but I'm sure that's in the back of somebody's mind. so the more general
Okay. This is a great question, and I mean, this basically is another – the state of our – of the curriculum of the Mythgard Institute is a product of how new we are. We have a whole bunch of courses which we can offer. Right now, I'm in the process of trying to figure out what courses students really want to take, because we are wanting to offer courses for people based primarily on their availability, that is on the students' availability and on their interests. You know, we would like to make available to you. There are so many times that I've heard from people on the podcast, oh, I would really love to be able to take a class on Anglo-Saxon. I would really love to be able to take a class on C.S. Lewis. And basically, we want to hear from you. We have a page set up on the Mythgard site, which is called Our Future Courses. And if you go to that page, you will find this whole survey form to fill out, and you'll see a whole bunch of options. All of the courses that you see on there are courses basically that I'm ready to pull the trigger on as soon as I know that there are students who really want to take those, and to figure out which ones we should offer first, so that we can really get to people the courses that they want most. A whole bunch of people have voted in the, you guys are gonna sort of find this funny, I think. In the 2 days that the site has been up, we've already gotten 80 votes through that page for classes. So people are voting, and that's great. Keep the votes coming. I can give you a little preview right now. So far, the leading candidate of all the courses out there, among the 80 people who have signed up, is an introduction to Anglo-Saxon language. That is by far the most popularly requested course so far, which means I'm working on that. I mean, I would like to see us get an Anglo-Saxon course this year, either spring or summer, if we can do it. Because it is clear that people really want that. People really want a Latin class. That one actually surprised me a little bit. I had that available and people are loving that idea. There are a couple of the fantasy classes. People want to learn Quenya. People want to take the subcreation and mythopoeia class that I put up there. And so what you want to do, put up there, and we will try to make that happen. My plan is to, you know, I have the one class that I'm already arranging to offer in the spring, my Lewis and Tolkien class, which is going to happen. And then in addition to that, there are going to be probably at least one, probably two other courses that we're going to offer. And then we're going to offer, I hope, also another three classes in the summertime. So, so let us know. Now, there are going to be, some requirements that you're going to have to do for people who are wanting to complete the master's degree with us. It's not going to be a complete grab bag. We are going to want you to do some distributions that we're going to, but we're kind of holding off, not knowing what we're going to be able to make available exactly when as we get started here. You know, I haven't published that yet. We will publish that once our curriculum is a little bit more firmly established, which, as I say, will happen when people start, you know, start voting and enrolling for these courses. So first step, let us know what you want to do, sign up for classes, and we'll make them happen.
So, to do that, go to the MythGuard website, which is mythgard.org. You'll see tabs across the top, click courses and then click future courses and there'll be a Google form there and that's how you vote. And I strongly, strongly encourage all of you, who want to take, anyone who wants to take anything other than Harry Potter in the spring, go vote, because I know for a fact that several of our Harry Potter social media friends are getting ready to do posts on MythGuard Institute and to tell their communities to come over here and vote for Harry Potter. So I imagine that number is about to inflate very, very high, I'm sure.
Serious ballot stuffing for Harry Potter. And hey, look, it's funny. I know that a bunch of people were paying attention to the fact that that this past weekend I published an article that was critical of Harry Potter. To any Harry Potter fans who are listening right now, I want to say, come and convince me. Okay, come to the MythGuard Institute. I am perfectly willing to host a Harry Potter class. You know, show me. Let's actually have some serious academic inquiry into Harry Potter, and you guys can prove to me that it's as good as you say it is. So bring it, Harry Potter people. Let's do this.
Come on, Dave, let's go.
The gauntlet is thrown. Okay. Yes. And I will be one of those people voting for it. Actually, I already did. I also voted for classical Greek. So let's see.
Also very popular, I have to say.
Yeah. One thing we were talking off the air is, suppose I take the class, I have an overinflated notion of my abilities or my free time, and I sign up for credit. And 4 weeks in, I think, oh my God, there's no way I can keep up with the writing. But I would like to continue listening along to the lectures. Can I switch to auditing or even drop the class?
The answer is yes. I want to, you know, there are some places, you know, it's pretty common policy at many schools that you can, you know, that basically there's like a period at a window at the beginning of the semester where you can drop or withdraw, but then you're kind of locked in after a certain point. And I have no interest in doing that, especially since I know there are going to be a lot of people out there who are thinking about taking this class basically on a gamble, you know, having been out of school for a long time or whatever and being uncertain. And I want you to know this is not going to be a really high risk endeavor. If you get halfway through the semester and you're finding, look, I just can't hack this, as you said, Dave, I don't have as much time as I thought I did. I don't think I'm going to be able to write the final paper. Then you don't have to. You can drop down to an audit. And we will basically prorate the tuition. So we will refund you, the part of your tuition for the course that you haven't done yet. And it'll be fine. I mean, as we said before, the goal of the Mythgard Institute is not to, squeeze as much cash out of people as we can. We want you to be able to have that freedom and that opportunity. So if you need to withdraw, if you need to drop down, you can totally do that. Now, going the other way is a little bit more awkward. If you get three quarters of the way through the class as an auditor and say, hey, I want to take it for credit, you can't really do that because you've already missed a whole bunch of the papers and stuff and, missed out on the discussions all the way along. So there is going to be a shorter window for that. If you start off as an auditor and in the first, by the end of the first 2 weeks, you're thinking, hey, this is great. I can totally do this. I want to write the papers. I think I want to take it for credit after all. We will let you upgrade within those first 2 weeks to a full enrollment. You won't be able to upgrade after that, but you can always drop down.
Cool. That is great to know. That's yet another example of breaking the mold, because that's the, usually there's a hard deadline. You drop after this, you're screwed. You've forfeit your money. So, I think that's wonderful. Another thing that people are curious about, and I guess this relates to, actually, yeah, let's do that. What kind of technology will be used? In other words, what is the sort of day-to-day experience, not the content experience, but the day-to-day, right, how does it work experience like? And in particular, people are wondering, how are we going to facilitate interaction with professors, interaction with teaching assistants, interaction with other students, that sort of thing.
Right, right. No, and that's a good question. And I know that some people might get a little intimidated when I say, oh, this is going to be online education that's going to be more intensive and more high tech than ever before. And there might be some people who are like, I'm not sure I can handle the high tech. And that might be a cause of concern. We're going to make this as simple as possible. The conferencing, For our main lectures and things, we're going to be using some pretty simple and easy to use conferencing software. It's very commonly used in the business world. I found in general that corporate like meeting software and webinar software tends to be much easier to use than academic software. So that's the direction we're going to go at first. We're going to be using a website called GoToMeeting, which offers this kind of platform. For the student, you're not going to need to download any software. You're not going to need to install anything on your computer. All you're going to need is an updated web browser. You're going to get a link. You're going to log into a site, and you're going to be in the classroom. For the lectures, you're going to have to do nothing else. You just log on and, Michael Drought will appear on your laptop screen and start talking to you. So, that's really all it's going to take. There will be an opportunity to do some more interaction during the lectures. There will be a text input feed that you'll be able to type. If you have a question that you'd like to ask the professor, you can submit that question by text, and that question will be, your questions will be relayed, to the main professor during the lecture. But, other than that text input, there's nothing you need besides your web browser just to log in to do that. If you are taking the class, so if you're auditing, that's all you need. You don't need any hardware. You don't need any software. You just need a web browser. If you're taking the class for credit, you do need one other thing, because those who are taking it for credit are also going to be taking part in the interactive audio discussion in the small groups once a week. So those people are going to need a microphone. So if you're going to take the class for credit, you do need to get yourself a microphone. Now, many people already have microphones built into their computer, so it shouldn't be a problem. For those who don't have a microphone available, we are assembling a group of links, which we will have in our frequently asked questions page, which will be up soon, where we have some recommendations for hardware that you can purchase which will not be very expensive, but which will enable you to do all the stuff that you need to do. So you're going to need to plug in a mic, and you're going to need a web browser, and that's the most you're going to need as far as tech equipment goes.
Cool. I think that's really exciting, and I think that's a good choice. That, you know, we're not going to, at least early on, we're not going to be a software company. We're not going to try to build our own new stuff. That we're going to use existing things that work, and we're going to focus on delivering content. I think that will make people feel better. So speaking as someone who's been participating in the Silmarillion seminar, I personally think that that the experience is actually excellent. I think the software we're using for the Silmarillion seminar is less than ideal, but that's not necessarily the one we'll be using. We'll be using ones. But it's amazing what a great experience it is. So I think people should be excited about it, not trepidatious.
Exactly. And the thing that I would say about that, and this is, of course, is particularly on my mind this week, is I have been surprised. When we started doing the Silmarillion seminar, which is very, which is very similar to the kind of small group discussions that we're going to be having during the Mythgard classes every week. When we started that, I expected it to work out okay pedagogically. That is, I expected as a teacher to be able to lead discussions effectively and have people, you know, have an interesting time. What I wasn't sure about is whether we would be able to build the kind of classroom chemistry that you tend to be able to build interpersonally, in a live classroom. I mean, and I'm sure, you know, all of you have had experiences in college where, you know, the group of people in a class really bonded and got to know each other and really just enjoyed each other's company during the course of a semester. And I wasn't sure that that would work out so well, you know, when we're all sitting in different parts of the country talking over microphones and not even being able to see each other's faces because it was just an audio interaction. And I have been astounded. I mean, the relationships we have developed in the Silmarillion seminar have been beyond my wildest expectations for that. And I mentioned that this week that is particularly on my mind because last weekend, just a couple days ago, I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico with several of the Silmarillion seminar. A bunch of us got together, seven of us got together in Albuquerque for the conference of the Mythopoeic Society. We delivered a panel of papers, and it was the first time any of us had ever met each other in person. And yet it was like a meeting of old friends. It was such a great time. I think that this kind of classroom experience is going to be a really, really great one for people. But again, from a technological standpoint, it's going to be really simple. And certainly there has been a wide variety of technological comfort and competence even in our experience with the Silmarillion seminar. And yet everything's worked out just fine.
Yeah, the presentations at MythCon were excellent. I mean, they were just fantastic. I'm hoping that we can record each of our presenters reading their paper and then share them on your podcast to show people what kind of high quality work came out of that. And that, you know, the classes are going to be more rigorous than those, you know, than the seminar has been. So, I mean, I expect that the work is going to be really, really good.
I mean, it's one of, just to add on to that very briefly, one of the things that I plan to do through the Institute is to start a new journal where we will be especially going through and publishing the best work from our Mythgard classes during the year, because I've been so impressed with the level of analysis and the level of work that people in the seminar have been doing. And I want to give people who take our Mythgard classes an opportunity really to to shine and to share what they're doing with a wider audience. So I plan to basically go through and take the best of the papers that we get in any given semester and publish them in our own journal, so we'll get a chance to really really show. And then, so that's one opportunity that'll be there for the students who enroll for credit to the classes and write the papers. But sorry, go ahead, Dave. You wanted to ask another thing also.
One of the questions that people ask, and we're actually having this discussion in the chat room right now, is what are the, you know, talk about the teaching assistants. And I realize, of course, and I've been careful as I've been expressing my opinion in the chat room to say that this is my opinion, not policy necessarily. But I see us what we're going to be doing, I'm trying to encourage people not to think of our setup as the traditional professor-TA relationship where the professor teaches and the TAs are the overworked, overburdened, underpaid folks who are doing this because that's what's paying their tuition this quarter. But it's not their main purpose, nor their main goal, nor their main passion, and their institute doesn't value it. That we actually want our people to be teachers, like people that are there because this is what they want to do. They want to teach this stuff, not they're doing this to pay their tuition while they go off and do their esoteric research. So talk a little bit about our assistants and how we're going to get really good people.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that's, you know, as president of the Institute, as I've been planning this out and working on this, you know, this is another entire dimension of the Institute that I have been really excited about. I mean, of course, one of the primary things that I'm thinking about all through is the opportunities that we can provide for students to take these classes. But I'm also really excited about the opportunity, about the chance to provide opportunities to teach these classes, not just to, you know, to the world-renowned scholars like Professor Shippey, Drought, and Flieger, who are going to be teaching with us in the fall, but for teaching assistants, because there are a lot of people out there who are wonderful teachers, and who are people who are, you know, who are eager students, who are either studying for their PhDs, you know, and or who are already teaching Tolkien in other places, and who are going to come and teach with us as preceptors. I've chosen in general, you know, in sort of the vocabulary of the Mythgard Institute, I'm going to be using the word preceptor instead of teaching assistant, primarily because exactly, Dave, as you were saying, because I want to separate this from the common idea of, you know, I am a graduate teaching assistant and I'm doing this because, like, this is part of the academic sweatshop system that I, you know, have to do in order to get my PhD. This is not going to be like that. I have been so excited to, you know, I've already reached out to, you know, I have several of our preceptors lined up for the fall semester. You know, of course, and I have some other people kind of in the on deck circle, depending on how many students we have enrolled for the class. We'll see how many we end up needing this semester. But, and I, you know, it was one of the things when we first started this up and began planning this that I was really excited about, you know, to call these people up right away and say, you know, I've got these really great people. Some of them are former students of mine for whom I have an immense respect who have gone on to graduate study on their own. Some of these people are, you know, are other people that I have gotten to know, in other contexts, and all of them, you know, are just really top notch thinkers and teachers that I am just really excited to partner with. So I think that this is a huge thing. I think that there are this is something, you know, Dave, as you say, graduate TAs so often, I mean, you know, you can get some really great TAs and people who are in training and who are going to become really great teachers. But, you know, sometimes you get people who are putting in their time and they're getting paid, you know, nothing. And it's not really a pleasant situation. My goal is, you know, as I said in our previous broadcast, one of the sort of the conceptual pillars, what I want to accomplish with our form of online education is to be able to compensate our people really well. And that might seem like a strange thing to say, you know, that my goal is to pay people lots of money. But I think that teachers are systematically underpaid in our society, and I think that's really dumb. And I think that the work that teachers do and the work that our preceptors are going to be doing, the work that our professors are going to be doing is really valuable. And I want to reward them for that. And I want to set up a system where you've got people who love to teach and who get paid fairly and well for the work that they do. I see down the road, I can see preceptorships at the Mythgard Institute being not just a thing that you serve your time in, but something that people would want to do for a career. You know, that the kind of teaching opportunities that we're going to be able to have for people, I think it's going to be really fun. Right now, the TAs that we have are people who themselves have master's degrees. Many of them are in PhD programs. I wouldn't even be surprised to see us have some PhDs teaching at that level to start with. So I think that's something that's really exciting. One other thing that I'd say just to kind of add on to this, if you are out there and you are thinking, gosh, I have a master's degree or a PhD. That sounds like a fun job. I would like to be a preceptor. Contact us, send us an email, and we will, you know, because we are definitely interested in finding good people. We want the best teachers that we can get in the world, because the pool of people we can draw from as teachers is just as unlimited as the pool of students. Anyone around the world can join us at Mythgard, and we would be very interested to do this.
Yeah, this is something we talked about a lot over the weekend. And the more I think about it, the more I'm excited because you know, I really think that this is what's going to make one of the things that will make our education as good as, if not better than, traditional stuff. Because we'll have we're not going to have teaching assistants, as you said. We're going to have teachers,
right.
And these are going to be people. And that's not to say grad student TAs are all bad. They're not. But universities are stuck with who they have. Some of them are good, and some of them aren't. We're not. We're going to recruit people for a specific job. People aren't going to be doing this in return for getting something else from us. We're going to be recruiting people to come in and to teach and to be good teachers. And if they're not good teachers, they won't be around.
Yeah, so, exactly. It does mean, you know, that we're going to, I mean, just to inform applicants about this, you know, we are going to have a fairly rigorous screening process for this reason, because we do want to make sure, you know, it'll be a multi-step process. And, you know, because we do want to make sure that when we launch our classes, that we are doing it with, you know, people who are really successful and dedicated teachers. You know, that's our commitment to our students. And we're excited to make that happen. But, you know, we're definitely committed to seeing that.
Excellent. So one interesting question that you've probably hear all the time at Washington College is, what does someone do with a master's degree in English?
Anything.
I think that's a great, you know, I think that's something we maybe ought to address. I think there's a lot of people who aren't even asking that question because they're like, oh, I can't wait to take a Tolkien class and an Anglo-Saxon class. But I think there's a lot of other people who are wondering, you know, okay, I'm getting a great value for a master's degree, of course, but is it still worth my money? Like, how is this going to benefit me? What am I going to get from this?
Right. And I mean, the answer basically is, you know, different people can be benefited in different ways. Certainly. I mean, the group of people who are most obviously and easily benefited will be teachers, who, you know, for whom having a master's degree is a great advantage. And I think that there are a number of people in different careers for whom the having of a master's degree doesn't necessarily even need to be training in a particular field. But if you have a master's degree, it can be advantageous for you. You know, there may be people who are thinking about, there may be people who are thinking about teaching or have, you know, I've often gotten emails over the last 2 years that I've been doing my podcast from people who say, you know, I would love to teach. I've thought about going back to school because, you know, I love Tolkien. I love this kind of thing. I would love to be able to get into teaching. Where can I do that? How can I do it? Can you recommend any programs, you know, that specialize in Tolkien studies? And the fact is, there have not been many programs that specialize in Tolkien studies. There haven't been many opportunities for that. And of course, one thing that you can do with an MA from the Mythgard Institute is teach at the Mythgard Institute. That actually, I think, would be a lot of fun, and not just the Mythgard Institute, but also at Signum University as well.
This thing keeps growing. I mean, obviously, the people that we have taught and trained are going to be going to be the best candidates for coming back and teaching the next generation. So, One thing I want to add too that you and I've discussed is you know, there's other things too. So I want to call people's attention to something that occurred at my alma mater, Stanford University, just a few months ago, called the Bibliotech Conference. And the URL for it is humanexperience.stanford.edu/bibliotech, BIBLIOTECH. And the subtitle of it was Bringing Humanities PhD Innovation attention to Silicon Valley. And there is a growing movement. Now, how serious it is, I wonder, you know, at the end of the day, will they actually hire these people? But there's a growing sort of discussion, at least, amongst tech companies and business companies and marketing firms and venture capital firms in Silicon Valley, at least, who are saying there is value in these degrees, in the skills that these people have, that they can bring something to the table that a computer programmer or an MBA or a marketing person doesn't have. The kind of critical analysis and the skills that they build in doing graduate level work brings value to our company. Now, they're talking specifically about PhDs, but I think it generalizes, because what they're talking about with PhDs is that ability to think creatively, to do critical analysis, that kind of stuff. And so I think there's possibly value. Does it have the same value as doing a master's in computer science? No. There's no sort of study. There's, you know, there's no statistics to say get a master's in English and you'll add $20,000 a year onto your salary. Maybe not. But I think that there's potential there. And so people shouldn't be so quick to assume that this is a useless degree that doesn't benefit their professional career.
Absolutely. And there you get straight into, as you said, the kind of talk that I give at Washington College all the time, because people often have misconceptions about that. And I think, frankly, too many people think I mean, obviously, I can understand why people tend to think in very kind of simplistic and goal-oriented ways about education, you know, that usually when people say, what can I do with this degree? What they really mean is, tell me the specific jobs that I will be trained and prepared for by this degree. And of course, that's not what the liberal arts are about. What the liberal arts are about, and what, you know, some of these Silicon Valley people are realizing and emphasizing, you know, when you study this stuff, when you become a sort of a better critical thinker, and you know an intellectually broadened person, you develop a set of intellectual skills which can be applied in any situation. No, you're not going to be trained for a specific job, but you're going to be given a set of skills which you can apply to almost any job. And I think that, you know, I mean, will a master's degree in English open millions of doors to you around the world? No, not specifically in that way. But again, I think, you know, this is another thing. I think that one of the reasons that people have been more and more and more thinking in that way when they go to college or when they go to grad school is because it costs so much money. I mean, if you're shelling out $200,000 for a college education, I can certainly understand why somebody says, I want to know exactly, you know, in monetary terms, what I'm going to get out of this and is it worth my investment? But this is one of the things I hope that we can help to do by changing that paradigm a little bit for our students. It is not going to be about the money. It's not going to be a huge investment of your money to do this. And that hopefully I think that people will be able to kind of change the way that they think about it. Not, I've got to make this pay off for me big or it's not worth this investment. Rather, it's a small investment for what I hope will be a really big return, even if that return is purely intangible, that it's going to be worth it with the ways in which it will even just enriching your regular life, even if it doesn't open specific career opportunities. And I think that I think that that's the kind of thing. I mean, again, that's a tough sell when you're spending $50,000 a year at a regular college to say, oh, but your life will be enriched. Well, yes, but you'll be in debt. Here, you know, here I think there's a different situation.
And I'm cultured, but I'm broke. Or,
go ahead.
Or your life will be less rich.
You can say,
right, yeah, exactly.
You can say, I'm cultured.
I think that's a really exciting part of this. We're really going to change the conversation about the liberal arts back to what it should have been. You know, you're right. Increasingly, people are looking at this as a you know, from a balance sheet standpoint. I invest this amount of money, and what return do I get? And you're right. When it's such a huge investment, you're forced to do that. But when it's a smaller investment, that doesn't have to be as big a consideration. And I certainly, you know, as somebody who works in the tech field, I am a person who is a walking example of this. I live on the boundaries. I have a master's degree in computer science. I work in a technical field. But my background is liberal arts. I did a degree that was highly interdisciplinary, and I spent a lot. I took, five quarters of classical Greek, and I took religious studies classes. And I can tell you that those skills, maybe not in a very, you know, not in the same way that I can say that my programming class comes into play play every day, but those come into play. My ability to communicate, my ability to create, come up with new ideas, my ability to write and talk and express ideas is much richer than somebody who was just trained to be an engineer. I was educated, not trained.
Another thing along those lines is technology changes. Knowledge that the knowledge and the insight that and the enrichment that you're going to gain through this Master of Arts program does not change.
That is exactly right. Somebody involved in that Bibliotech conference, a billionaire CEO of a company called Tibco, who owns the Golden State Warriors, said exactly that. He said, "I don't care if somebody is highly specifically trained in some specific piece of software or framework or library, because it's 10 years from now that may be completely gone. It may be useless. I need people who are smart and who can adapt and who can learn new things and apply new things." And that is exactly what he was saying. And that's why he's saying that I try to hire people who have liberal arts backgrounds, who have studied the humanities, because I know those people will do a better job. I know that those people have been educated, not just, you know, taught a technical skill.
And you know, I would also add here that, you know, this kind of, for exactly these kinds of reasons, this is one of the reasons that we are developing the certificate programs that we are as well, because, you know, there might be people who say, you know, even though $5,000 is pretty darn inexpensive for a master's degree, you know, for an entire master's degree, still might say, you know, I'm not sure I want to spend that much money. I'm not sure that I want to write all these papers. I know I'm not going to use a particular degree, but I would still like to get some of that enrichment. I would still like to have as much as I can of this experience. And so, you know, for people who want to audit our classes instead of taking them for credit, you know, you do that for only $150 per class, and you can go through a curricular program that is like our master's program, auditing a series of courses, and we are designing these certificate programs. If you audit our 5-course program, you will get our Introduction to Tolkien Studies certificate. If you do a full 10 courses like the master's degree, you will get our Advanced Tolkien Studies certificate. And again, this is designed so that people can go through and have that and get that personal enrichment for really a very small investment for what you get out of it. So, you know, so that opportunity is going to be there too, whether people want to actually finish the master's degree or whether they, you know, this option is also open to folks.
Real quick, we have some people that are just tuning in. So we want to let them all know that we are here discussing the brand new Mythgard Institute with Dr. Corey Olson. You can find out more about the Mythgard Institute and enroll at Mythgard.org. That's MYTHGARD.org. Find out everything that you need to know. And we are going to release both of these hours of this discussion on Middle Earth Network Radio so that you can tune in and listen to those as they air. And we'll put them in pretty heavy rotation for the next couple of days or so. And, of course, you're already tuned in to Middle Earth Network Radio right now. But to give you the URL to that is myemeradio.us. Just wanted to throw that in there. Back to Dave.
Great. Thanks. Yeah, Dave, let's get some more questions from people in the chat room.
I think we're actually doing pretty good. I think we're exhausting the list of questions, and people now are resorting to just gushing about what a great idea this is and how exciting it is. And
been doing for weeks.
That's it.
Have you convinced your wife?
People about counseling each other about whether to take it for credit or not. By the way, people love the idea of being able to drop back and getting a prorated refund, because that really minimizes the financial risk at the very least. Because, you know, after the first few reading assignments, you're going to have a pretty good idea about whether you're going to be able to keep up or not. And if you dropped out, if you were like, okay, I can't do it, and you dropped out after a few weeks, you're going to get back almost all the difference between the full tuition and the auditing fee. So that's pretty awesome. I didn't know you were doing that. That's made up my mind. I'm signing up for credit because I have no problem. I'm willing to invest a little bit of money to find out whether I can do it or not. So I'm definitely signing up for credit.
John, I don't know because I stepped out to grab something to drink here, but John had a question from Rosemary. Did that get answered about classes being available on a podcast?
Yes, that we're still.
There's a lot we have to work out on that, isn't there?
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that's going to work. Certainly, anyone who signs up either to audit or to enroll in the MA program, all of the students who sign up for a class will be able to access the recordings of the lectures, the primary lectures, and the closing sessions. So both sessions every week. Certainly. During the entire semester, the extent to which those are also going to be available afterwards, there's a lot of details.
Several issues we have to work out. Yeah.
I would love to have a program like that. That'd probably be a separate kind of program. But anyway, it's definitely something that's on my radar screen. I can't promise it right away, but it's definitely on my radar screen, and we'll see what we can work out with that.
So. I imagine we're probably starting to run up against the end of this session. Michael said 15 minutes about 5 minutes ago, so we've got about 10 minutes. And I don't know how you guys feel about going on into a third hour, but but we are sort of – we've exhausted questions, I think. There – at least I don't have any new ones to ask. Well, maybe some will come in. But you know what I would like to hear a little bit about, Corey? I'd like to hear a little more about the academia side. You know, what you're thinking in terms of supporting research. I know, I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I know you and I and Dr. Jason Jewell, aka Pungo at CSTM, have something in the works now that would be a continuation of the Silmarillion seminar, which I think is exciting. But I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts that you could share briefly about the research side and how you want to spin up research.
Well, you know, I think that there are a lot of opportunities. I mean, one really simple thing that I want to do is I want to support people. I mean, I can tell you, with my experience of being an English professor, there is almost no support for research that we want to do.
The Defense Department isn't posting calls for proposals for you guys.
No, not so often. Not so often. And we in the humanities get frankly envious of our colleagues in the sciences, you know, as they're like, oh, I have to finish another grant proposal. And we say, hey, don't complain. At least you have grants you can apply for. And we just generally don't. I want to change that at the Mythgard Institute. You know, one of the simple things that I want to do, I want to have research funding available. I want to have people to be able to apply for research grants and research fellowships with the Mythgard Institute, so that if there's somebody out there who has a great idea, who has either, you know, a book that they're trying to work on, you know, a project that they'd like to do, you know, if we think that that sounds like an exciting project, we would like to be able to fund them, and to help see that happen. I would, as I mentioned earlier, I would like to create a journal from the Mythgard Institute, where we can be publishing some things. I would like to support other journals. I know, again, one of the experiences that I have had, you know, sometimes people have said, especially when I first started my podcast, people would say, wow, you're so generous you're doing all this work and you're just giving it away for free. That's so amazing. On the one hand, I wanted to be like, well, yes, thank you. I am very generous, really. But honestly, what I was thinking was, what are you talking about? We never get paid for what we do. This is perfectly normal for an English professor. So I would love to be able to go to other journals and be able to support them and say, hey, you know, I have an idea. Let's actually reward people for doing good research and actually pay them to publish articles and stuff. I think that, you know, there are ways in which we can enrich even just the research community that's out there. But mm-hmm. I also think that there are some really new and exciting things that we can do, and that we can help, you know, like just – regular people, common people, general readers like the Silmarillion Seminar, you know, that you don't have to be a professional academic in order to do research and to write papers that are going to be really interesting, that are going to be actual contributions.
Much is clear from MythCon for sure.
Absolutely.
You go to MythCon and you see there are everyday people there who are okay, none of them are going toe to toe with Virlin Flieger, or certainly they're showing up with a much smaller gun than she has, but they're still yes. doing very worthwhile stuff, and they really know their things, and they make contributions.
Nobody goes toe to toe with Virlin Flieger for long.
Yes, right. Yes,
she is good. But yep. No, I agree. This, but yet there are contributions, you know, that there are to be made, as you say. And this was at MythCon was a great experience for that. My podcast has been a great experience for that. I mean, the stuff that I get, the emails I've gotten from people, the comments that I get from people on my Facebook page. I mean, I've seen how many really smart people are out there. And the Silmarillion seminar, the thing that I think is most, for me, has been most special about that, has been most fascinating to me, most encouraging to me, has been, and don't take this the wrong way, Dave, you guys in the Silmarillion seminar aren't particularly special. That is, it's not like I selected, you know, I went out and handpicked the cream of the crop to be in this.
That's right. You selected the 15 people who responded most quickly to a Facebook post.
Exactly. It was an almost completely random sample. I guess not totally random in the sense that it did favor people who check Facebook obsessively over Thanksgiving weekend. But still, it was, you know, this was just a random cross section. And there have been times I've had to just remind myself of that. You know, there have been times during our seminar when I've been thinking, wow, this is what a great group of people. We've gotten together for this, and then I have to remind myself, you know, this isn't really different necessarily from any group of my listeners that I would have. And you know, I really think that not only, you know, and that's been kind of the second stage of the development of my podcast sort of philosophy. First was, I can do scholarly work and present it to a general audience who's going to be interested in it. You know, you don't have to like dumb things down for a general audience. You know, basically I've gone well beyond that to say, well, yeah, not only is that true, but you know, the general audience in question is also capable of producing some really interesting stuff. So I would love to see MythGuard be able to provide opportunities for more of that as well. And I, you know, the journal that we're going to do is one thing. I would like to support some various other endeavors, like the continuation of the Silmarillion seminar that we're talking about, and people will be able to learn more information about that soon. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Amen. Yeah. I agree with you 100%. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. Corey, give us you have 60 seconds to give us your final thoughts and about the MythGuard Institute.
Well, final thoughts. I mean, I think basically, first of all, remember, we are, the MythGuard Institute is exactly 2 days old right now. I think we're up at about 54 hours right now. We're just getting started up. This is a big experiment for us. We are really excited about it. We are really confident in what we're doing. But remember, when you're signing up for our courses, when you're getting involved, you are taking part in a brand new endeavor, and you have a chance to kind of get in on the ground floor of something really exciting. You can help to shape this. So I would encourage you to jump in, sign up for a class, sign up to audit a class, vote on the website, on our future courses page as to what classes you would like to see next. If you are a teacher, if you have a master's degree, if you have a PhD and you would like to get involved in teaching, apply. We are just starting up, and we are looking forward to getting connected with lots of students and teachers out there. So that would be sort of my last message.
Well,
there.
Well said. John.
Join the fellowship.
Join the fellowship.
Join
That's
the
right.
fellowship.
John, I was going to give you 30 seconds, and you said more than 30 seconds worth in two. That was great. Any final thoughts, John?
Yeah, let's just direct everybody to the website again. It's mythgard.org, and also there's a Facebook and Twitter page as well, and you can get those links right off the main page at mythgard.org.
Great. Dave, any final thoughts?
I would just highly encourage people to go sign up, keep asking good questions. I one thing that I want to emphasize is we're going to be very, very responsive to feedback. This is going to be a collaborative process between the people doing MythGuard and the folks who are the students, and we want to tailor this to your needs and serve your needs. So we expect to be very responsive to feedback. So we'd love to hear your thoughts now and while you're taking the classes.
Good deal. Mm-hmm. Mark, let's give you a few seconds here to beam with pride.
I've been doing that all night, but I would say that this is truly groundbreaking and historical, I think, just for online education. And I'm serious about this. I don't think this is grandiose at all to say this, but I think what we're undertaking here is groundbreaking, and I think that specifically for Tolkien studies, this is history making. And I would urge everyone, and here's a plug for the rest of the network, but I would urge everyone to stay tuned specifically over the course of the next 2 weeks, because we're coming out with some other very major announcements. So I think everybody will be excited about what's up and coming too. So,
and we are going to have to do this much more often. These live reports coming from the founders at the Middle Earth Network. We invite you to join us over at MiddleEarthNetwork.com and on our social site at MyMiddle-Earth.com. And of course, you have been tuned into Middle Earth Network Radio at MYMEradio.us. And I'm Michael Kaiser, Station Director at Middle Earth Network Radio, and for Mark Ostley, Director of Operations, John D. Bartolo, Director of Marketing and Special Projects, Dave Kale, Programming Director at Middle Earth Network Radio, and the very wonderful Dr. Corey Olson, President of MythGuard Institute. The MythGuard Institute at MythGuard.org. That's MythGuard.org.
All right. If you have any questions about MythGuard, please check out our website at www.mythgard.org and feel free to send us an email at info@mythgard.org. We even have a phone number, so if you would like to reach a live person to talk about things, feel free to call 302-535-6073. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.